I think as a business owner, I don't necessarily sell, but I really have learned to invest in relationships and be very, very patient with them. It's not my timeline, it's theirs.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Selling with Love podcast. I am excited about the conversation we're going to have around what happens at the top of the organizations. What happens with CEOs of companies, and what role does sales play in having them have more impact, them have more success in the journey of leading organizations around the world? And the guest that I have to discuss this further with us today is Deb Coviello, who is an advisor and author, a podcast host, and the founder of Illumination Partners. It's a consulting firm for CEOs who are navigating change. Change is quite the constant in today's world. So we're going to see what are the skills, the habits, and the role of selling with the positive attributes of selling with love allows you to be more successful, more impactful, whether you are at the beginning stages of your journey or you're already leading an organization. This is going to be a fantastic conversation. She is the author of The CEO's Compass, Your Guide to Getting Back on Track, and the host of the Drop-In Podcast. We're excited to have her onto the show. Deb, welcome.
Oh, Jason, thank you so much for the opportunity. I'm looking forward to sharing my insights with you and your audience.
I'm glad to have you here. Now, one of the things I find fascinating is you've worked in so many different industries and you've worked with the people that are at the top of the organization. And before I get to them, I wanted to understand your journey and if sales had an important role in the journey of you working now, consulting the leaders of organizations around the world.
So appreciate that. I mean, it's in a very interesting career, engineering background, fell in love with manufacturing at an early part of my career. So a STEM professional, honed my craft in the areas of quality and operational excellence in various industries, from electronics manufacturing to the chemical or flavor and fragrance industry. Later moved up the ladder into the head of a multinational company. And oh my, the responsibility that comes with. But in those ecosystems, the work was always there. So having been an operations STEM professional, never had to really learn about sales. The closest that I came to that before I jumped ship and became an entrepreneur was the fact that when I got to the head of quality, oh my, the salespeople were yelling at me because of the customers complaining. And one of the things that I really realized I needed was I needed friends with the salespeople, the commercial people. I needed to quiet things down and be a partner with them. So having worked with them closely to establish that rapport because they are the front line with those customers, we got to a place of more of collaboration and what can we now do in service to customers, not just respond to when we make a mistake, but happen to build those partnerships. And so I had people on my staff that were in charge of customer quality and stuff like that. We started building more close relationships versus the transactional work that we had to do. So that started getting me involved with the sales, the relationships that we had to have with our customers. Fast forward, jumped into having my own business, Illumination Partners. I thought I had it nailed when I got my first three gigs with just a little bit of networking. And that lasted about 16 to 18 months. And then the pipeline dried up and realized that I had not honed my skills in the areas of sales and marketing. Marketing a brand, I developed the Drop-In CEO brand. I figured out what my niche was. But that sales process, I was only doing what the guru said you had to do, the hustle, the grind, the transactional part of it, and fill that pipeline. And maybe I got a few gigs that way, but it definitely wasn't sustainable. So in the process, and I'm sure we'll go there, I learned that there was a better way to nurture relationships and eventually be in service and get those sales.
Very nice. I love that you have this breadth of experience, both from your time inside your organization and also as the entrepreneur that you're building right now. And I wanted to pick at something you mentioned there that I thought was very interesting, this adversarial or a loud and annoying voice that you might be getting from a sales team. When you join an organization, they seem to be the squeaky wheel in an organization. And is it often that they're ignored, or do they often are the ones that lead product innovation or changes in the way that you run the organization to have better relationships with customers?
I've never been asked that question before, but if I had to reflect really quickly, they are the front line to the customer. And they live the life of the customer. They know the challenges and opportunities that they're trying to make inroads in market share, first to market, something innovative, et cetera. So they really care about those customers. It's like they're one with the customers. And so when they come to me about, oh, they're complaining about this, and oh, that plant is not doing why, you know, I hear all this noise. And yes, they have to be the squeaky wheel to get attention because most companies are just focused on operations, and just ship the stuff because they're very service oriented. But when it comes to quality, even though they say quality may come first, sometimes it comes second. I've lived that. And so what happens then is when the customers are not getting what they ask for and expect, somebody has to be their champion. So yeah, sales or commercial people get a bad rap, but I actually think because they sincerely care and they live a day in the life of our customers, that they are loud because they want the attention, because it's not about just fixing one problem today, but it's about sustaining that relationship for the long term. And I had one salesperson tell me this. They said, customers don't remember that oops or the mistake that you made in quality or service. But what they do remember, God, I can't remember his name, but it was amazing. What they do remember is how you made them feel and how you had their back and how you took care of them, even if there was an anomaly or a bump in the supply chain. I remember that sincerely. So sales and commercial people get a bad rap, but they know their customer really well. We should take some lessons from them.
Ooh, well, you're definitely making me flutter because typically salespeople get a bad rep in the sense that they are people that take advantage, they manipulate, they cause problems, they make false promises. And I think we've obviously just painted a nice light about salespeople, but there's definitely a dark side as well.
There is, and it depends on their pedigree or the cultures that they have been in and how they are rewarded. So there are systems in place where obviously a business can only survive if we have sales and orders. And so they're compensated and celebrated for the transaction, but that only comes through the relationship building. Yes, there's some people that, yeah, might do some things that are not ethical, not right, and maybe undercut and don't necessarily serve the business as a whole. We have to think how maybe salespeople have been groomed, celebrated, et cetera. So we may have built those systems and ways that people behave. But I think there's a lot of really good people out there. Yes, they have to try certain things to move customers down the funnel. But I think truly they care and they don't want those relationships broken.
Good. I love seeing that. You know, one of the things I share a lot, and to be honest, I haven't worked at the level of organizations that you have. You know, I haven't worked in major manufacturing where your sales team is actually working at building long-term relationships, regular suppliers, long-term client. I've noticed more of the sales that happens from a B2C level. I often share the fact that when you start stepping into a very professional sales role where you're dealing with a lot larger transactions, a lot more complicated relationship building, you see the cream rise to that level of sales, but you often see that the beginning stages of sales, you're still going to be in the consumer sales, maybe the entry level sales. So as an individual who's just walking the world, most of my sales encounters aren't going to be seeing, you know, Jimmy selling a massive manufacturing contract who's been selling for 20 years, is all focused on relationships, selling with good. I see someone who's thinking about a commission, selling me a mobile plan, and maybe not telling me the whole truth about the terms and conditions. So I feel like my natural exposure to a sales environment will be the negative ones. I don't know if that's a common thing you've seen.
Well, I mean, as a consumer, I dread going into a car repair place because I want them to diagnose a particular problem. And I know that they're going to look like they're being thorough and upsell me. I just interviewed somebody from the personal care industry, and they used to have to work the counter in a department store selling personal care products. And they were celebrated that don't just service the customer and just sell them one item, but sell them a package. Now, mind you, maybe a complete look or a complete line of products is what they need to have the best experience. But when that one is reprimanded because they are a bad salesperson because they didn't sell them more than what the client or customer wanted, that's when salespeople develop behaviors that are contrary to what customers want.
That's really interesting. It sounds like the culture and the incentive programs make a much bigger predictor on ethical or non-ethical sales than the individuals themselves. Or do you think it works very much hand in hand?
It's hand in hand. I mean, there is people that just, hey, I want a quick buck with minimal investment and just want results. I've stepped into a place, and again, it's a lot about what I even write in my book, The CEO's Compass. And actually, it's the title of my next book, is I want leaders to stop chasing results and start pursuing peace of mind. And so that goes to the mantra, if you have a salesperson that just wants the results because they have to meet a quota by quota, what in the heck does that have to do anything with the customer by meeting a quota? It's the wrong metric. Now, it's a leading indicator of either process or performance, but ultimately, we want to be in pursuit of peace of mind. And peace of mind is not necessarily how much we've sold to a customer, but how many customers do we save or keep? How many customers tell others about our work? How many customers just stick with us during the hard times, the supply chain issues, during a pandemic? That is peace of mind, because we then rely on those people to help lift us up from a business perspective because we took care of them. So it's a little bit about the leadership culture and what really matters. Peace of mind, or just getting results or transactions.
I love hearing peace of mind. It seems like something I'm applying in my personal life as I'm trying to deal with which clients I choose to work with, what activities am I mostly focused on. Peace of mind sounds like a really great goal to go for, but can you measure it? What metric would you track?
Well, I'm looking at one right now on my battle board, on my whiteboard. I'm certainly tracking all the lagging indicators of how much have I grown my audience, how many podcast interviews I've done. They're the kind of indicators of activity. I said, but at the end of the day, for what? So activity is not necessarily getting me clients. Hustle and trying to get high volume, low ticket items into my pipeline so I can just keep a business going. That's not sustainable. Now, it's frustrating and it takes a lot of discipline. I don't have a ton of clients, but the clients I get, I absolutely love. And I think they love me because they know I deeply care about them. And so I believe with time and building those deep relationships, ultimately, things are going to snowball and build on each other, and they're going to refer me as they have done in the past. I think it takes a disciplined organization or a disciplined leader. Again, peace of mind is when your customers are selling for you. That is one of the ultimate things, and those are the kinds of things we should measure. How many referrals are you getting from your existing clients? That's a leading indicator. You're doing the right thing. Stop measuring the number of calls. Yes, you do have to do your outreach. Those systemically you have to continue to do, but how many deep relationships do you actually have? I mean, for me, podcast, I interview CEOs. I care about them. They've got great stories. They've got great value to bring to my people, but I'm also establishing relationships. Leading indicator, how many of the right people am I talking to? And then leading indicator, how often am I staying close to them just to be helpful, provide information, make valuable connections? Those are the leading indicators of potential future prediction of valuable relationships that value you, and the sale comes with. If you focus just on the sale, you may not get those meaningful relationships later on. I'm sticking with that.
I think that's a very powerful formula, and kind of gearing this towards someone who's listening who might be at the early stages of their business, trying to get at least the pump primed. You're trying to get your first sales out there. You're trying to, you know, get yourself up running, getting some revenue in. Any advice on sustaining yourself as you're following this peace of mind, or is there a moment that you have to at least, you know, put in that effort, maybe not get the perfect client. There's some discovery to happen. What's some advice we'd say here?
So you're hitting on real life, in real life. You know, I've been at this for a little over 6 years now, and I was lucky through my first degree connections who handed me off to some great second degree connections. Again, networking at the core, a leading indicator of meeting the right people. I found a lot of the right people, but at the same time, I may not have had a good sales process. Maybe my messaging was not quite right. Maybe I was targeting too many different personas. I did hit a point where I said, okay, the clients aren't coming in, and I had to take some other work that I was certainly skilled enough to do, but wasn't my ideal client. So I did some contract work, but it was all in pursuit of the valuable work that I meant to do. I needed to sidestep over here to do some work, suck it in, did what I had to do in order to keep the finances in such a way for the long game of doing the things that I need to do. Investing in myself as a business owner and somebody that needs to sell. I've had some coaches along the way, both in my brand messaging and how I present myself, a little bit of mindset as well. And again, I don't necessarily air all this because one might say, oh, that's a sign of weakness. But no, I've had some external support, masterminds, communities, etc. And over time, I realized I wasn't broken. I needed to hone my message, really figure out that ideal customer and put my mind and my heart inside their situation. It's not about me and making a sale, but it's how can I deeply understand them and help them through a situation. And I am finding by staying true to that, yes, I've had to continue some of the contract work. Little by little, I'm gaining trust. They're saying, thank you, Deb, for following up. Hey, can we have some coffee? Next thing I know, I'm a CEO whisperer. I can't breathe easy yet. I said, it's not all easy, but I had to do some self-reflection, alter my messaging, change my feeling about sales, change it to relationship building, and relationship building ultimately may result in a sale or connecting people I care with other people that may result in a transaction. So it wasn't all rosy. There was points of self-reflection, getting external support, feeling more confident in what I had to offer. And I'm seeing little by little, those relationships are turning into sales. And I'm grateful for that.
I'm glad you shared this because that's the journey that most people don't share at the beginning and that they need to go through. It's almost like a graduation process. And quite frankly, I also do the same. I mean, I've had a chance to jump in as a CEO within some organizations to help put my skills that I knew how to make an impact, even though it was a sidestep from my core message. But I find that through every one of those steps, there's something big I find out about what I enjoy, what I don't enjoy, and keep refining where exactly I want to go towards.
Yeah. And again, it's a risk-taking situation. Sometimes you do get clients that are not the greatest. You endure because they value. But I've actually had one where I think we both got to a point. I was a fractional chief operations officer for a PR company and great relationship. That's where I got the CEO whisper from. So I gained so much from it. But I was working in a culture and with a leader that was different than what I was used to. And so I had to flex some skills in order to meet them where they were at. And at the end of the day, were they the ideal client? Probably not. But I learned so much along the way. And to your point, what is the ideal client and what is not, and how to be able to see them more clearly than just taking any kind of work.
Yep.
As a business owner, entrepreneur, someone running an agency, having the top-tier website is very important, and you're more than likely running your business on WordPress. But are you hosting on the best platform possible? That's why I'm excited to bring Kinsta as our sponsor for today's podcast, which allows you for faster load time, top-tier security, and human-only, best-in-class customer support. So if you're looking to have your website hosted on WordPress on the best platform, Kinsta really goes above and beyond to make sure your websites load fast, your SEO is working well, you get the support you need, and you get to keep focused on your business. Are you ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get the free month when you sign up at kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their website. Visit kinsta.com and get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today.
I wanted to take this towards a point that for so many people, the aspect of a CEO is feeling very distant. Like I'm talking about the large CEO. It's like a different type of beast. And since you've been speaking with that client a lot, you have a lot more knowledge of them. And one of the questions I'd love to bring forward is, how much do you see sales play a role for people that are CEOs? Like, are most of them all natural salespeople as a leader of an organization? Or do you see a lot of them also have that resistance, have that fear, or a misunderstanding of what sales is?
So it's interesting. It depends. Some of them have come up through the sales ranks and have ascended to that role. And others in that CEO role have kind of come up through the innovation side, more that visionary, the CTO kind of role. And so for those that are in those CEO roles that have that highly technical, strategic, and visionary role, tend to not enjoy sales. They enjoy the creative process of working with a client or customer on a new innovation. And they hire strong people in the sales role. They understand the need to build a relationship and collaborate on it. But I find that they do find sales a bit of a struggle. Now, I find the other CEO that comes up through the sales channels, they love spending time with the customer. They are so focused on building relationships. So I have definitely seen where one doesn't have strong sales, they complement with a strong COO or some other title to support them in an area that they don't feel comfortable. It's not a weakness, but a strong leader that doesn't have a sales sense or doesn't enjoy that pursuit of trying to find that work, a good one will find somebody to complement with those skills.
I'd be curious to know, for the person who's lacking those sales skills, maybe you're at an earlier stage, what are the types of qualities in a partner that could complement you would you typically start looking for?
For somebody that would help on the sales side? So it's one of those things that if I had to think about this, if you have for somebody that's moving up into that CEO role, maybe they're in the innovation space, the tech space, and they don't necessarily feel comfortable with sales. One of the things that I've seen that's been very valuable is start working with the salespeople and going out on sales calls, because sometimes you could be quite invaluable. A salesperson is as good as the tech leader that's next to them. They may be saying, oh, it's got all the bells and whistles. It's definitely going to solve your problem. But sometimes the customer will bring their technical people in, and then the salesperson is doing a song and a day, oh yeah, we can do that. And then they go back to the operations and say, what did you say we could do that? We haven't even started that development. I would say definitely anybody who's up and coming, who's going to potentially ascend into the CEO role, spend more time with your commercial or salespeople visiting customers and just understand what their pain points are or what their needs are. And at the end of the day, you may not be that person that is into sales, but you lead with a different kind of heart to say, okay, I know we need to do this, but what would be the impact on the customer? They might ask better questions. And then the salespeople would go out and poll, ask questions of those sales. So you still don't have to be an expert in sales, but your perspective might be a little bit different and be more customer-centric when making those CEO-level decisions.
Yeah, I think one of the things that seems to be a downfall is when you become so far removed from the customers, you stop even figuring out what is it that you're even selling, why you're selling it, and you're just not in touch with what is it that people want, what things are changing. And I'm wondering if today, since there's a lot of innovation happening, technology changes a lot, do you find that CEOs maybe operating from an old model of what people's wants and desires are? And is that making the need to connect with the customer even more required today than ever?
Well, that becomes then the new strategic imperative. So often when I see strategies develop for CEOs in concert with their shareholders, they're talking about, you know, market share and, you know, innovation, et cetera. I think the CEO has to be keenly aware of what those innovations are. What is the impact on society? They have to be close to that and hire or bring in, you know, tech leaders that can help paint the landscape of what it is. Again, they may not be in touch with your R&D department or your innovation, but they at least have to be aware, like, okay, where are we at risk of maybe missing the mark with our customers, and make sure that we're associated with the trade societies or bring in talent that could advise them in that front so that they can stay current and relevant. The other thing, though, you start leaning into when organizations get so big and those CEOs get so distant from the actual work and they lose touch with what the customer needs, what the industry trends are. I say nay to that. And I know that some companies are 6,000, 10,000. There are ways, if a CEO really wants to remain connected to the rank and file or the pulse of the customers, they don't necessarily have to do it themselves, but they have to have and establish a culture. People need to understand, even little people on the front line have a picture or an image or a persona of what that customer is. And there's many creative ways where you could have internal podcasting, where you're interviewing your customers and sharing that. You could have customers come to your plants or facilities, have them showcase how their products are actually used. We did that at a flavor plant. So many of our flavors went into like a Pringles or a Coca-Cola or an alcoholic beverage. We had customers come to the plants and have that exchange and experience. Regardless of whether it's innovation or staying connected with our people, when the organization grows, there are creative ways that even if it's not the CEO talking to the operator on the front line, you can create an environment where people are in touch with the technology, in touch with their customers. I think it's kind of a smokescreen or a victim mentality when people say, I can't. I mean, one more thing. I talked to a CEO of a company, it's about 80 people. And he came in when there was about 50 and he said, I knew everybody. I knew what to get them for a Christmas present because I knew them deeply. And he says, the biggest thing I was afraid of, and he told me this, was that I was losing connectivity with my people as we got bigger. And so he's at about 100 people right now, but I know he has made a concerted effort to engage with the people. He may not know everything, but it is a family culture. They continue to serve. They serve the community. I've had him back on my podcast. They've done amazing work, and they're a fixture in the community. So leaders, don't hide behind the excuse you're too big. There are ways that you can stay connected to customers, technology, risk, trends, etc.
I love what you've highlighted a few times throughout this conversation is the power and importance of culture, whether that's getting you to sell in a more effective way, whether it's shaping the organization and your business and making sure it's connected with the customer. There needs to be something here about the culture. And that's a word that I've heard a lot in my management days. And I'd be curious to know, for someone at early stages, maybe you're just forming the company, there's probably like a blank slate to this culture. Are there some key things you would suggest people to pay attention to look out for if they're starting out and they want that culture to start on the right foot?
So as we get to these larger companies and you see on the walls, here's our mission, here's our vision, here are our values, and we cascade them down the hill in our PowerPoints or slide decks or whatever you want to call them, and hoping like, oh, we've established a culture. Well, I say nay to that. There's a couple things around that. One is culture cannot be dictated by a PowerPoint and a town hall, but culture is what you feel at the front line. And I'll tell you a quick story about that. But I am actually working with a new president of a company. He was the VP of sales and marketing. He has now ascended into the president's role. And one of the things he says, I'm concerned. I said, you know, we've been able to operate as a mom and pop shop, but I now need some structure. And I said to him, I said, yes, we need to have you construct the mission and vision because it actually didn't exist. What are your values? Because values are what we preserve, and we need to talk to our people about what then does it mean to me. But I think there's a step further. I also said we also need to establish guiding principles, because in the heat of the moment, when things are busy, customers are screaming, etc., people will make the wrong decision unless we establish the values and guiding principles for decision making, because we can't be in all places. When we say we will not sacrifice quality for anything, even if we are late, just a guiding principle will help not only the leaders make a decision when faced with conflict, but the operators of the people on the front line will. And if we can stay true to those things where we don't put people in a position of making a bad decision, I got to get it out the door, versus, oh, quality, I'm going to have a defect. Culture puts people in the position of making bad decisions. But if we as a leadership team take deep interest in guiding principles and values, and we commend people for making the right decisions and stopping the line, we build the culture from the top down. And I will tell you what culture looks like from the bottom up. I had an incident where in a fragrance plant, we made a mistake. We contaminated material. We didn't harm anybody. But what did result in product coming back and some lost sales? We had to do training videos to kind of say, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. This is how to follow the process so we don't make a mistake. We're videotaping the leader. And we see the operator pop into the screen as we're videoing it. And we kind of stop the film and we say, do you want to actually do the training? And they said, yes. And so when we interviewed the person, they told us exactly what they were doing, how to do it, to prevent a defect, not just what they were doing, but what was the impact on the customer if we actually didn't follow the process and how it could affect them. And as we're filming this thing, I'm getting goosebumps saying, oh my God, the front line understands exactly the impact of what they're doing. And that is peace of mind. And that is the right culture. So you got to see it. You got to feel it. You got to be amongst the people to see if what we're saying and cascading has gotten into their soul and the way they perform.
It's one of the big things I speak about in my concepts of selling with love. And it's no secret. It's just labeled around the sales department. But the start with why, I say start with the impact. Like if you don't know the why, the impact of every activity you do, it becomes very difficult to motivate a highly effective workforce, because to me, sales is everything. So if you're trying to get your employees engaged in the work, they have to understand why they do every single step. If you're trying to raise money, that's a very obvious sales scenario. If you're selling the product or service, same thing, very obvious. And if you're trying to get partners, you're trying to do anything, there's a human on the other side. And that importance of getting to understand the impact of every single step, every single process, I think is getting people motivated and preventing those mistakes. And I love what you're sharing around guiding principles to make sure that for every decision that's coming up, you have that kind of green light. If you can't reach somebody right now, if everybody's empowered, things start moving and then you can understand why decisions are made. And uncertainty sounds to be the most expensive thing in an organization, making people just freeze because they don't know what next action to take. And what I keep doing in this conversation with you, Dev, is everything that's happening from a CEO perspective, I can see how this exactly happens the same way with a client interaction if you're directly selling. Like if you're not giving clarity to the person potentially buying as to how is this going to change? Here's what it's look like. Here's why we do it this way. This is why our product is this way. It moves them into decision. And that's why to me, when I start studying management, I start studying sales, I feel it's so connected and all of it is so powerful. And what you're sharing around culture is what I want to see more in the world, whether they're small organizations or larger ones.
So you started triggering me when I was starting to think, well, then me as a business leader in my own entity and my sales process. And I realized why I was having problems with sales, because there was a disconnect between my values and guiding principles and ultimately just trying to help somebody. And so, you know, the guru's telling me like, okay, make sure that you bring them along in your funnel, get them into your mailing list, get them into your mastermind. And oh, by the way, always have a next date on the calendar for when you're meeting with them. And I followed that, but it just felt like such effort. And I found that sales, and again, I've had some people work with me a little bit, it is about the relationship. So how can I invest in relationships? And what I find is when I simply take the time to listen to whoever is got something gnawing at them, they've got a problem, they can't put their finger on it, or they know their organization is not going the right way, or they themselves don't have the courage or mindset to manage a new landscape. Again, the CEO whisper. I find deep listening, reframing to show them I heard them and what I see, but also providing additional insight on what I think is possible or where I think they're missing. And I just know when I see that head bob up and down and our heads are vibing together, I know I've connected with them. And that is one of my themes or guiding principles about why I do what I do. And it's about connecting with humanity. And if I lead with connecting with humanity and just at least deeply understanding somebody, it is the first step in connecting with their chemistry. And then it's also a way to show them that they can trust me because I hear them. And that's maybe sometimes all they need. And maybe I don't get a transaction, or maybe I get one later. And so I think as a business owner, I don't necessarily sell, but I really have learned to invest in relationships and be very, very patient with them. It's not my timeline, it's theirs.
Deb, I really appreciate the conversation we've had here. I know that getting into a space where you're doing what you're doing is incredible. The influence you've been having on big organizations of all sizes, really, but really you're moving the needle into people appreciating the culture, getting them to actually operate more effectively, care about the clients, care about the results. This is exactly the types of organizations we want to see shape. And it sounds like you're playing the big role in making sure to orient the CEOs who hold immense influence over these organizations to do it in the right way. So I have to ask you the questions I do ask everybody who comes on the show, which is, what does selling with love mean to you?
Again, I wish I could cross out the word selling, but it's more about carry seeing them with love. Because when I can see them and understand what they need, I can then share my value. And it's one of those things, I guess, and it's catching me a little bit off guard. I know you asked this question, is almost getting teary-eyed when I know I've served them. And selling doesn't mean I have to have a financial transaction. But can I help them or impart some insight to have them breathe a little bit easier? That's love, because I sincerely care. And you know it when you really, really do love a client. So selling with love is because I just deeply care. I understand them. And if I can give away a little bit of free insight to make them feel calmer, I've done my job selling with love.
Well, Deb, for everybody here, if you've actually done a big difference in everyone's lives right now, for the biggest takeaway for me here is just understanding that peace of mind is a very powerful thing to lead with and to go for and to bring that to your clients, to bring that to your life. I think we're going to organize the world in a beautiful way and be able to do it in a loving and caring way as well. It's been a pleasure and honor. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing. And for everybody who is listening, make sure if you're building your organization, the power of the culture is going to shape what steps you take in a massive way. The sales side doesn't need to be something that's annoying. It's the place where you're most connected with the customers. You've heard it time and time again in the conversation. Every sales team is usually close with the client. If you lose that connection with the client, you might not be bringing in the right information, working on the right things to make their lives easier. And so your sales side is a beautiful thing that you can integrate inside of yourself. If you're not someone that's leaning onto the sales side, you can find partners that can work with you, and don't completely abdicate your responsibility around connecting with the customer. Keep that always in check and make sure that you're always participating. And I think if you have those foundations in place, you'll be well on your way of creating a great organization with massive impact. Deb, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure, Jason. Thanks, you again.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.